Welcome back, everyone, to HTO Football. It's myself, Andrew. Tom's off on the bench this week having a rest. We're back in the book club. We've got a really interesting chat for the next half an hour or so with author of Back in the Big Time, John Dyson. John, how are you doing? Are you well?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me on as we speak. It's a dark November evening, where other than that, I'm doing fine.
Yeah, too right, a November and a wet one. So we've obviously got you on to sort of talk about your book, which really fascinated me. The first thing that fascinated me was obviously being an Arsenal fan, we often look back at the 89 season. Also Sheffield Wednesday, for me personally, is a club that I had a lot of early memories of being a youngster growing up watching football, because Arsenal played Sheffield Wednesday quite early on in the 90s in a couple of big cup finals. So Sheffield Wednesday and that kit, the blue and white stripes, the owls, that was one of the early images for me as a football fan. So this book just sort of, I gravitated towards it. I just wanted your early thoughts on really the reasons for the book.
Yeah, it's actually my second book. The first one came out 3 years ago, and I'd spent quite a long time on the first one. It focused on the Owls in the mid-70s, where to put not too fine a point on it, they were terrible. Called Owl Lowest Ebb, and it ends in 1976 with the Owls having to win their last game, or win or draw their last game of the season, to avoid relegation to the then Division 4. That's it. That seemed to go quite well. Got lots of good reviews, sold a few copies, and positive feedback on it. And I'd never really thought of doing a second one at the time, but the kind of that feedback kind of pushed me, where can I go next? And having done the kind of bottom of the scale, well, a few years later, when the Wednesday had recovered a little bit and come up through the leagues, and by the mid 1980s, they were pushing for the top of the Division One and pushing their way towards through cup competitions. So I thought, well, let's go for the opposite end of the scale and see where they are a few years later. It was also, I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan, and those years in the mid 80s were my kind of formative years watching the Alps. So those two sort of things combined, kind of the opposite of the first book and the fact that it was an era that I personally remembered, is what pushed me into that kind of time period for the new one.
So this book obviously oversees the 1984 to 86. The Owls have been sort of in the wilderness for over a decade, going into the season of 84. As a fan, John, what was that period like on the rise back to the big time?
That was fantastic. My first ever games were the season before, the promotion season, 83-84. And Howard Wilkinson, the manager at the time, had taken charge of the team, following on from Jack Charlton, prior to the 83-84 season. And he absolutely stormed it. That season, 83-84, they could have won the league at a canter if they'd have carried on all season that way. Very, very exciting football. Good players, midfield, attack, defence, wherever you're looking, good, solid players. And really, they should have won the old Division 2, but kind of drifted away at the end once it gained promotion and Chelsea overtook them. But finished second and did very, very, very well. And continued that into the top flight in 84, 85, and again the following year, winning at Anfield, both seasons, winning all four games against Manchester United, getting to the quarter final of the League Cup, semi final of the FA Cup. It was an exciting time.
I was sort of doing a bit of research for this chat, and they don't just sort of they're not just back in the big time, but they're really feasting, aren't they, at the top table. And that first season back, the record, you just touched on some big wins there, and their league finish, I think it was top 7-8, was it?
Eighth of the first season.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fact. Yeah, and you sort of you spring towards the modern day world now, and you just what's so great about this book and this story is that those stories of the rises from the depths don't seem to really be as regular anymore. I wonder if the money in the game has kind of reduced the likelihood of this happening. I know we've seen it with teams like Bournemouth and Brentford, I guess, too, as well. But I guess I wanted to ask you that why specifically that short time period to focus in on the book instead of doing more of a longer piece?
Because I think it tells a story. I think at the end of 85, 86, I think that's a turning point. And the team doesn't decline dreadfully, but after that tails off a little bit. So it's a kind of the peak, and there's a kind of turning point there, or whether the club should invest a lot more in the players, or what should it do? And it kind of it just tails away a little bit. So I think that kind of finishing on a high, but in kind of almost, I mean, you touched on the early 90s then. I don't care to remember too many of those cup finals in 1993. But in a way, in typical Wednesday fashion, they don't quite get there. They finished fifth, which would have qualified them for Europe other than the band that followed, and reached the FA Cup semi-final. But they don't quite go that one step further in terms of winning anything. And after that, it tails off. So I think that kind of back in the big time, the celebration with that kind of tinge of what if not quite is why I finish in 86.
Yeah, it's interesting because I often feel I've been speaking to Tom, who's sort of not with us this evening, but we've been talking lately about, you know, Arsenal's rise seemingly to the top of the Premier League table. Not you know, it's obviously to be seen if we go on and do things, but we've been talking a bit about as fans as well, just being a bit more in the moment and enjoying a rise, knowing that really this is probably the best bit. Because once you're at the top, and as you said a minute ago, you know, once you're at the top, and when Wednesday were back at the top in 84, 85, 86, you're all, the expectations rise. Fan expectations obviously go through the roof. And then there's almost like a lack of gratitude almost that you feel like, well, now what? What's the next step? And as football fans, we're always having to grapple with that, aren't we? Of enjoying the moment and enjoying just where you are, and then looking ahead and being like, what next? Because there's always another game. There's always a new target, etc. Look, you touched on it a minute ago there, John, but just to sort of elaborate on that really as a fan, and also how the club was seeing things at that time. But as fans as well, where were you at in 84, 85? Were you thinking, right, just enjoy it while it lasts? Or could you see yourself going further?
I think the fans always want more. I think, and I think you're quite right to point out that kind of enjoying the rise, enjoying the moment perspective of it. Wednesday had been relegated from Division One as far ago as 1970, so 1984 is 14 years out of the top flight at the time. That was the longest the club had ever been out of the top flight, beating that record in recent times. But at the time, that's the longest period out of the top flight. So there is that kind of period of enjoyment of getting back to the top table, perhaps where people felt the club ought to have been, and some of those results and some of those grounds that fans haven't been to for a very long time. They had actually been to Anfield in the League Cup in the promotion season and lost, and then the fans finished that game singing "We'll be back, we'll be back." Early in 84, 85, they were back, winning 2-0 at Anfield and singing, "We told you we'd be back, and here we are." So that kind of celebratory kind of comes out a lot in the book. Actually, I spoke to lots of fans, and one of my kind of aims in writing this and the last one is to reflect a football club from all angles. So I spoke to lots of players. I spoke to Howard Wilkinson, the manager, the coaches, the backroom staff, but also plenty of supporters, and tried to get the perspective from all sides. And you're quite right to point out that the perspective of the fans is in general that kind of celebratory, happy to be here. If I'd have carried on to whatever, 86, 87, 88, where the team's tailing off a bit, Howard Wilkinson's direct tactics, plus the fact that the team just is tailing off a bit, maybe not investing as much in the players as the fans might want, or Wilkinson himself might want, would have been a different story, I think, in a less happy one.
Most enjoyable part of the book, would you say? What would that be?
In terms of the writing of it, the people I spoke to from all sorts of angles, there's some great interviews in there, there's some great stories, and the ability to pull all those stories together to tell one overarching story is what I really enjoyed. Some of the stories, some of the stories you get really interesting ones from people who are just maybe a little bit one step removed. So there's a chapter, for example, on the reserves and the youth teams, and some of the stories from players who were in those teams, but perhaps didn't quite make it, or went on to play non-league football or whatever. Some of those are some of the most interesting and fascinating ones, I think.
Yeah, because I guess you always, I'm sort of having flashbacks here to when I watched the 89 documentary and also the book that came out. And you're always being shown the stories, aren't you, of the superstars of that team and the recollections of the main people involved. But actually, it's those ones, isn't it, in the background that often provide the more sort of interesting nuggets.
They do. Yeah. And some of the not so much with this book, actually, a little bit more with the first one, but sometimes people are a bit polished if they're used to speaking to reporters or authors or the press or whatever, and they know the stories and told them 1,000 times. But if you catch, I caught one of the groundsmen, for example, and he let on that they actually tried to get a game cancelled by pulling for a frozen pitch by pulling the tarpaulin back and get it cancelled. You shouldn't really be telling me that, but you know, he's happy to put it in the book, don't let him go in, you know, and how they'd used bales of hay to keep the penalty area from freezing when they wanted a game on. You know, kind of stories that you don't hear on the day to day, and those kind of things, I think, really help make the book.
Yeah, I think Nottingham Forest were trying to do that the other day, weren't they?
In these days of undersoil heating, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't. I think a bad pitch. Mm. A bad pitch in 2022 isn't a bad pitch in 1985, is it?
No, it isn't. It was Derby County. They played Derby County in the Cup early in 86. It was the FA Cup season, and they had to try several times over to get the games on in that January and February, and end up playing, I think, 10 games in February to squeeze everything in after the frozen pitches. Different times, which again is one of the themes of the book. I briefly hinted at the Heysel issue previously. But, you know, this is a time of hooliganism. This is a time of standing at games. This is a time of when you're an away fan, you're often penned into some horrible cage. These were different times to what we have nowadays. And I think that also interested me. And in reflecting back on 30-odd years ago, I was 10, 11 years old at the time, and my kind of lifetime and my memory. And I guess if people are 10 years younger than I am, those kind of memories of football have gone, have changed. Mm. Football is a different game from the Premier League onwards than what it was in the mid-80s.
Mm. So just before we sort of touch on a little bit about the club now, in 2022 and how they're getting on in League One, a couple of questions really about that. The era of that the book is focused on. Have you got a favourite memory/game of that era?
There's a number, but the first one back in Division One was against Nottingham Forest in a really hot August day in 1984. This was the time when the miners' strike was on. Many Nottingham miners had set up their own union and gone back to work. Many miners in South Yorkshire had not, so you've got that kind of political kind of thing going on in the background. The game itself was close to a sellout, really roasting hot day. Nottingham Forest with Brian Clough, of course, in charge every Wednesday with Howard Wilkinson. Howard Wilkinson had said prior to the game that he was going to carry on his kind of attacking, excited football that had got him so successful in Division Two. And they did just that. They won the Wednesday 1-3-1. It was 1-1 at half time. Wednesday had a twice taken penalty that a bit of gamesmanship from the Forest players took a little bit of time to get the second one in, but Mel Stirling did his traditional long run up and calmly put it in the bottom corner. And then one of the greatest goals I've still ever seen at Hillsborough. Nottingham Forest corner, headed away by the central defender, Peter Shirtliff, to Imre Virardi, who's a kind of live wire of a striker. He picks it up inside the Wednesday's half, runs to the edge of the penalty area and absolutely leathers it into the top corner. So 2-1, close to the end, the third goal goes in, 3-1, give a bit of polish to it. And for all those reasons, the politics, the huge crowd, the hot day, the result, Nottingham Forest actually had one of the players who'd helped send Wednesday down to Division Two back in 1970, playing for them, Ian Boyer, Brian Clough being there. So it's just one of those games that kind of has everything, had everything, but it went the right way, as far as a Wednesday supporter is concerned. Mm.
Just for listeners, we haven't snuck on John Motson just for the last couple of minutes. It is John Dyson that has talked us through that favourite memory. How about favourite player of that 3 year period, John?
Oh, no, that's another tricky one. My personal favourite player would very probably be Mel Stirling, who was the right back for much of the time. We call him a right back. He was as much of a winger as a right back. One of Howard Wilkinson's techniques was to play what nowadays is really common, but three centre backs with Stirling at right back and often Nigel Worthington at left back. But Mel Stirling would get up and down the pitch, almost playing as far up as a winger often, and he could cross a ball as well as anybody else could. He's a Sheffield lad. He's a Wednesday fan, so he's living everybody's dream, I suppose. Took the penalties, as I mentioned. Scored a few goals. They used to nickname him Zico because he looked a little bit like the Brazilian Zico. Jack Charlton used to nickname him the Flying Pig because he was a fan of eating other people's dinners. But he was a great player, great exciting player, and one who gave all for the team as many others in that team did as well.
I was going to say a forward thinking progressive fullback in the mid 80s. Who would have thought it? Eh? Who would have thought it?
One of the things I learned from the book is how forward-thinking and progressive Howard Wilkinson was. I knew how successful he was. I remembered how I'd enjoyed watching his teams. I think he has a little bit of a kind of black mark against him in perhaps the newspapers or people's minds for being, a long ball merchant. Sometimes he was direct and sometimes he wasn't. He was much smarter and much more forward-thinking than that.
Well, and also it just reminds us, doesn't it? So if you consume too much mainstream media now, that you're just told these messages, aren't you, about like how the modern day fullbacks are like these progressive bombing on, the game has changed, and actually there's lots of things that are still the same, aren't there?
It's certainly mostly that. Three centre backs. I see the current Wednesday team play with three centre backs in a different way than Howard Wilkinson did, but it does make me think nothing's new necessarily.
No, the whole pressing phenomena, is almost like this modern day coaching thing, isn't it? But actually, teams have been pressing for decades. There's obviously different twists on it and it evolves, doesn't it? But they're definitely not new things, are they? So just to sort of move forward then, I guess 30 odd years or so, John, Sheffield Wednesday now sitting fairly, well, I wouldn't say comfortably at the top of League One, but they've started off well, haven't they? What are your expectations for the season?
I think mine and many other fans' expectations are promotion. I think anything less than that would be a disappointment. We could, maybe should have been promoted last season, got to the playoffs, finished above Sunderland, but lost to them in the second leg in the last minute. The team looked a bit tired by that stage. The owner, to give him his due, has helped the manager put a great squad together. That Barry Bannan should not be playing in League One, and yet he is. And the squad he's put together is an excellent squad with a mixture of youth and experience. Darren Moore, as the manager, seems to have figured out what to do in League One. There are some teams that they've really put to the sword this time and scored 3, 4, 5 goals against. He seems to have figured out what to do against those teams who play what Darren Moore calls a low block, which is basically get everybody behind the ball and try and stop Wednesday from scoring. So he seems to have figured out how to get around that a little bit. The fly in the ointment for Wednesday is that both Ipswich and Plymouth have had absolutely flying starts to the season. Wednesday are averaging 2 points a game, which really should have them in the top two. Those two are averaging two and a bit and are 3 or 4 points clear of us. We've got to hope, I suppose, that they slip up at some stage and we keep the 2 points a game or thereabouts average going and finish in the top two. I'd hate to be in the playoffs again. It'd be great if we win them. I'd much rather
finish first or second
and not be done with it. One of my favourite memories of a Wednesday fan is winning at Cardiff in the Millennium Stadium in 2005. That was a great day out. But if we'd have lost like we did at Wembley in 2016 or lost in the semis like we have a couple of times over, it's the worst feeling. So, top two, please. And if not, win the playoffs.
I'm glad for Darren Moore, actually. It's good to see him, doing well because I think he's... he's had a sort of up and down managerial career. Would you say?
He did okay at West Brom, didn't he? And then they sacked him. I think that Doncaster, where we got him from, might well have been his only other managerial job, and he was doing okay. And then we we poached him. I like him. I like him a lot. He seems very personable. He seems to have got the tactics straight. He seems to get one of the, you hear that players want to come and play for him. So we seem to be able to pick up decent kind of Premier League loans, you know, kind of get to a 19, 20, 21 that need some time on the pitch. So he seems to get that sorted and get, he was quoted not too long ago as saying he tries to improve him and his coaching team, trying to improve every player. And Barry Bannan, so he's 31, 32, wherever he's now, has also been quoted and said that Darren Moore has actually improved his game, which is takes some doing because Bannan's a fantastic player.
No, yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah, I recall the dismissal at West Brom being a tad harsh, actually.
Yeah.
Reflecting on that. But thank you so much, John, for that.
No problem.
Really, really good chat. Thanks for coming on. Really enjoyed it. For listeners, there might be a copy of John's book, Back in the Big Time. I am actually holding it up now, John, aren't I? I'm not making that up.
You are, yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
So we might have a copy available as a giveaway soon in the coming weeks. So obviously keep an eye on our Twitter page. As you know by now, that's where you find out all the information about what's going on at HTO Football on Twitter, at HTO Football. And speak soon, guys. Take care.
Yes, thanks, Andrew.